This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 12 years, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon and into what stuff means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. You can listen to episodes online, get them off iTunes or Google Play, or subscribe using a podcast app. Whatever way you choose, they're free and there's a new one weekly. The 16.9 Podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported from the start by Jeremy Gavin and his team at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. Rickwood's company was founded to bring some order and logic to how mass transport systems present information, like routes and schedules, to passengers. It was a tall order for CHK America, because many or most transport authorities had their own way of doing things, and not that many were particularly good at making it easy and familiar for people to find their way around. But the company has seen a lot of success, and its best practices have been widely adopted. When people take unfamiliar buses and subways in cities they visit, there's a reasonable chance the information on the signs they will see look familiar and are readily understood. Ideally, CHK says, people should be able to find out what they need in 8 seconds or less. All the understanding of how people seek and consume information is now being applied by CHK through a spin-out called Connect Point on digital displays. The company started with big interactive screens, but now the really interesting work is with dynamically updated solar-powered e-paper signs at bus stops. In this week's podcast, I spent a lot of time talking to Wood about how mass transit users find and use information and how all this translates from static to digital displays. So Rick, thank you for taking the time to chat with me. I don't know very much about your company. You're pretty new into the digital signage space, so maybe if you could talk about CHK first and how you've kind of migrated into signage through Connect Point.
Sure. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for inviting me to speak with you today. Yeah, so CHK started in 2000, and its express purpose was to bring a best practice standard to the public transportation industry in the way service information was communicated to customers. The U.S. is very fragmented as far as how agencies put out their customer information, the level of that information, the accuracy of the information, and just the deployment of the information and their strategy around the information. So in 2000, we started CHK to bring that standard, which is typically found in Europe and many parts of Asia, and try to bring that to the U.S. and, you know, make it the standard that the industry could adopt for passenger information. And we've been very successful at that. Almost every large agency in the country, most medium-sized ones, a few smaller ones, use our designs. And what that does is bring a consistency across the way service information is provided to the public. And what's important about that is if you're going, it provides a greater sense of mobility, of connectivity, understandability, rideability in the case of public transit. So if you're in Toronto and you're trying to, you know, ride a bus around downtown or a train, and you've figured out how it works in Toronto, but then you go down to Boston and it's all different. Everything about that communication is provided to you in a different way, different format, different strategy, different logic. It's like relearning an entire system again. It's very frustrating. It's very destructive as far as allowing the customers to access any given transit system. And it happens even within the same system. I mean, you go to different parts of different cities. There's no information. The information that is there is designed differently. It's crazy. So what this best practice standard has done is allowed agencies to deploy a consistent way of communicating across their entire system. So as you move from point to point within a system, then you can understand how to use it. It opens up the system. Instead of going from point A to point B, you now have the confidence to go from point A to point B to point C and back to point A. And it also results in a much greater return on investment for agencies' assets because they're filling up their buses or their trains, more people are using them, et cetera, et cetera. So the industry's always had had problems effectively communicating that kind of service information. It's a big country. So, I mean, you know, people do as best they can. You know, there's limited budgets for this kind of thing. They have to keep tires on the buses. They got to keep gas on. They got drivers. So there's a lot of big infrastructure costs associated with public transportation. And oftentimes, unfortunately, the description or, you know, the deployment of how to use a system is oftentimes overlooked or neglected. So I'm happy to say that the industry has put a lot more effort into it lately and over the last 6-7 years, I'd say. And with that, you know, go ahead. Were you going to ask me a question?
Yeah, I was just curious. How does this manifest itself? Is it when you're in a subway car or a bus, you see the route map in a certain kind of design, certain kind of font selection? When you're at a stop, you see the schedule and it looks a certain way, so that when I take a bus in Cleveland, mm-hmm. if I've really made some bad decisions, or Denver or whatever it is, they all kind of look the same from city to city, or look, there's some sort of logic to it, as you're saying?
That's it. It's logic. There's a certain way, because we've done a lot of studies on this, there's a certain way that people interpret information. It's a puzzle, okay? And so the logic behind how people best interpret transit information is understandable. And if you design that information using that logic, most people will get it. Our slogan of the company is 8 seconds, because our studies show that if a rider cannot understand the information that you're displaying within 8 seconds, then they'll make one of two decisions. They won't use the system, or they'll go try to find a customer service agent, which at a bus stop, they're not going to be there, right? Mm-hmm. So our standard that we use is 8 seconds. And that is, someone unfamiliar with your system should be able to walk up to one of our information panels and not to understand the whole thing, because some of them are complex, but they should be able to begin understanding something about it within 8 seconds. And if they get that initial understanding, they're more likely to continue looking at information to get to the answer to the question they have. So, for example, even if it's a station and you know, it's got the name of the station at the top, so you know you're in the right place, right? That's an obvious piece of information to be at the top of the hierarchy. And then you want to go down that. So you start, there's all the information that is in a hierarchy. You want to start with the top hierarchy of information that was important at that place, and then funnel your way down to more specifics. So it's a series of anticipated questions and a series of answers. So we know what people need to know initially, then we know what the second source decision-making process is, et cetera, et cetera. So when we design our information, we do it in such a way that it allows them to make those series of decisions in a logical way. And it has enormous effect on people's ability to feel comfortable with their understanding of how things work. And what, as you said, I mean, it's hubs like train station, transit center have overview information. So you can see, you know, all services from, say, LA Union Station. You got bus, you got train, you got all sorts of things. They're going everywhere. I mean, they go all over LA from there. And so we would use a product called a spider map, which we developed that. It's a trademarked term. And it gives you an idea of all service from Union Station in a very organized format. And then as you go out of the station, there's other breadcrumbs that you follow to get to the bus stop that you're looking for. Once you get to that bus stop, it should be very specific. What can I do from this bus stop? Not what I can do on this entire route, or, you know, the entire three lines of service over there in the other parts of the turnaround. It just has to be very granular at that point, where you have to decide whether to get on the bus or not to get on the bus. So you have to have a high degree of confidence that you're getting on the right bus and you're going to the right, in the right direction, in the right location. And so it's a network of information pieces, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. I consider myself reasonably smart. And you know, if I get into other cities and I'm taking their mass transit system or commuter rail or whatever, I am constantly on the lookout trying to figure out, am I actually on the right train? Am I going in the right direction and all those things? And for people who aren't good with directions or aren't good kind of thinking on their feet, it must be terrifying.
Oh, it is. And trains are easy because they're linear, right? I mean, they really are understandable. And even those can be intimidating. I mean, I got on the wrong train in London once and went, you know, entirely the wrong direction for a little while. But I would say that and buses are even scarier because they take left turns and right turns. And before you know it, you're in a neighborhood where you don't even know you're in the wrong neighborhood, right? Because you're not familiar with the town. Yeah. So the buses are even more of a challenge. I mean, right now in the U.S., WMATA, Washington, D.C., has by far the most comprehensive customer information from a static perspective, static information on signage in the whole country. I mean, they're at the level of London and Paris, you know, Berlin, all the great cities in Europe. They are at that level with their customer information where, you know, there's 6,000 stops with stop-specific information. So you can walk up to any bus stop and see where you can go from there and when the bus is coming. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's a Herculean effort that many agencies, you know, would have trouble executing. But many do that, but to a lesser extent.
I would imagine, as with many things, there's been this attitude, so to speak, that digital solves everything. Part of the problem has been everything's been in print. But now that we can have interactive screens, everything's going to be resolved off of one screen and people will no longer be confused. And we have an endless archive of information that we can feed to them. And I bet you're going to tell me, yeah, but it doesn't work.
Exactly. And the reason is the same as getting back to the logic and the confusion. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can throw, well, you know, we all know part of the problem these days is there's too much information in everything we do. You know, on the news, you're overwhelmed with the, you know, information that's irrelevant all the time. You look something up on the computer, it can take a while to find what you're looking for. And so it's the same thing with digital information and transit. It has to be very focused to the question that you're asking so you get relevant information. We design interactive kiosks, the user interfaces, and that is a real exercise in keeping focused on what the hierarchy of information is. And apparently, we've done a good job with it because we have kiosks in Pittsburgh and Las Vegas that get 20,000 interactions per month. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen an interactive kiosk in public, maybe at an airport or at a hotel. They're probably lucky to get 20 interactions a month, much less 20,000. I mean, I travel a lot. It sounds like you may have. And I don't see a lot of people using interactive kiosks in public. And I think primary
retail.
Yeah, or in retail. And, you know, a lot of that has to do, I think, with the way the user interface is designed, but also because you're more in a known space, you don't really need it. Whereas in transit, if you have a question, you kind of need to know the answer. And so, you know, if it's between taking the A train or the B train, you really do need to find the answer before you go do it. So apparently our kiosks are helping people make those decisions. And it's great to see. I mean, I've seen lines at them before, you know, for people to try to go into the interface, just waiting their turn patiently. And it's very satisfying to see that.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit screenfeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that, and then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
Yeah, it's interesting. Where I live now, there are people who in the grocery store, there's a lot of seniors living in my area, and there's now self-checkout, and I'll see the express checkout line with like 12 people in that line, all seniors, and nobody in the express checkout because they're just scared to death of the idea of using self-checkout because you got to use a machine and where do you begin and all that. So I just skip right on by there and I'm in and out of there in seconds.
Well, yeah, and it's funny because the other, there's, so this all revolves around cognitive load. That is another area that we've studied extensively. Now, cognitive load is a very interesting concept, and here's why. When you're sitting at home on your computer, you feel very comfortable looking at complex ideas, complex situations. Say you're doing research on flying from Logan to Heathrow. At home, it's very quiet, very focused, very low cognitive load. Okay? So your decision-making ability is at a much greater capacity than when you're under high cognitive load or stress. Mm-hmm. So we know that when people are using public transportation, the cognitive load is great because you've got a lot of distractions. You've got other people around you. You've got all sorts of environmental issues that are distracting you. You're making decisions on your well-being sometimes, just wondering which, not literally well-being, but you know, you don't want to get lost. So you have a lot of pressure on you to do the right thing, especially if you're unfamiliar with a system. And that generates a tremendous amount of cognitive load. Now, our whole job is to reduce that cognitive load. So when you're looking at something, you can understand it and you're confident that you're getting the right information. Now, when you can reduce that cognitive load, then people want to use the product. They feel comfortable as it encourages them to, you know, execute on their decision making. And I'm telling you right now, that scenario you just described about the senior standing in express checkout line, that's all cognitive load. They're worried. And that is a huge milestone to overcome in a lot of situations, not just public transit, but you can imagine, you've walked through airports and wondered, you know, am I at the right gate? Did I miss my flight? I mean, it's stuff like that, that you get, you know, your decision-making becomes sort of frantic at times, right? Am I going to miss my plane? And is this the shortest line through security? So when you start having that kind of pressure on your decision-making ability, you tend to make wrong decisions more often. So our whole goal is to reduce that cognitive load so you can make the correct decision more easily.
Can you still adhere to the 8 seconds mantra when you get into something that's interactive?
Oh God, yeah, absolutely. It's more important actually than that. You know, what I was saying about information overload, because things are digital and more things are digital, people think that you can just throw more information at people. That's not true. In certain circumstances, it's harmless and non-impactful. However, in our world of public transit, it's very impactful. You don't want to try to overload them with too many choices. I mean, I've been in front of kiosks in big cities. I've not even been able to find I hesitate to say the city, but you'd be amazed that I couldn't find this point of interest on the interactive kiosk. And I mean, it's one of the most famous things in the whole world. And it wasn't on the kiosk. And at that point, I was just like, oh, where do you go from here? If it's not on here, what isn't, you know, it's just, I couldn't believe it. It just, my entire confidence level in that unit and that interface just was like, this is ridiculous. You know, how could they leave this off? So it's really important that, especially I would say in the digital world, that the cognitive load and the hierarchy of information is adhered to even more, because it's too easy not to, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think of, I had a podcast two, 3 weeks ago with a guy who runs a software company that does mapping for wayfinding. Uh-huh. And we talked a little bit about things like maps for wayfinding that draw virtual lines saying you're going to go this way and you're going to turn right and then you're going to go this way and then you're going to turn left and so on. And I've looked at those things and thought, to your point about cognitive load, I'm never going to remember all of that.
No.
Is there a lot of bells and whistles to these directories and transit applications that just realistically are never going to work properly?
Yeah, sure. And this is an interesting idea. So phones are great devices. A lot of agencies want to rely on phones to convey complex information. Doesn't work for a couple reasons. The screen is too small. I mean, this is actually a physical issue. It's very hard for humans to ingest and understand complex information in a small format like that. I mean, we all have big monitors. Why do we have big monitors, right? I mean, why do we do that? Because when you have things spread out and it's open, it's a little easier to kind of pick it apart. If you're sending complex instructions onto a phone, they better be very good, because most people don't want that. It's very, very hard for them to understand. Phones are great for a couple things, and they're beautiful for short messaging. So, you know, line 34 arrives in 4 minutes. Beautiful. That's all you need to know. I mean, that's just a simple message, and humans are great at ingesting and understanding those short messages. But when you try to get more complex with it, most people can't process that, and they don't want to. And if they do, they might not understand it if they try. So, you know, certain agencies in the U.S., because it's sort of passing the buck, if you will, we expect everybody to have a phone, and that's how we're going to communicate digitally with about our service. Well, they've just kicked the can down the road. They've kicked it entirely down the road. It's not our problem that they don't have a phone. It's not our problem if they can't understand our information. So it's very inexpensive for them, because all they have to do is write an app and they're done, right? We're done. We've done our job. Now it's up to the public to understand what we're doing and get a phone and get our app. So that's a cop-out, in my opinion. Humans don't like to interpret that kind of transit, you know, complex information, which transit often is, in that format. So, but it's inexpensive. So I get it. I get that part of it. But I just don't, I think everybody would agree that's not the best way, but it might be the best budgetary way.
Right. So this kind of leads to ConnectPoint and this spin-out company that you've started. I gather you run CHK and you also run ConnectPoint?
That's correct.
And what was the genesis there that you saw what was going on, saw that phones weren't the answer, and saw that if you could get digital out at transit stops, you could provide updated information, you could do some of the best practices that you've been doing in static for a long time?
Absolutely. Yeah. 4 years ago, you know, I had been thinking about it because I've been seeing interactive kiosks pop up around the country. And as I said, you know, when I was looking for that point of interest, it was unusable. I just became so sort of disgusted with what was being offered to the public that I decided that we could do better. And I hired the right team. And the interesting thing is you need technologists and you need wayfinding experts, right? Because you can write all the coolest programs ever. But what I found when I was trying to interact with these things was that, hey, it's cool programming, but it's unusable because it's so poorly designed. So it was a nice blend of our traditional expertise being turned into a interactive user interface. And it was a beautiful thing. So we have all that knowledge about what's important, hierarchy, how people choose what to look at, which in this case would be interactivity, and then apply that to a, you know, 55-inch interactive kiosk. It's very exciting. I mean, it was sort of the natural progression of taking all that years of experience and then moving it into the digital age, if you will, because, you know, that was pretty obvious to me, you know, 5 or 6 years ago that we had to start transitioning into that. And then the interactive interface was a great place for us to start because it allowed us to use all of our skills, really, in all the different modules that we developed to try to help people use these transit systems. So after that, after the interactivity interfaces that we designed, we really, you know, because those are great. Those are great in train stations and bus depots, you know, bus transit centers. Perfect product for that. Well, you know, and a system might have five of those, but they have 5,000 bus stops. So how do we get information into those 5,000 bus stops? And that is how, well, that was when we decided, well, we started researching possible solutions. It took us a while, you know, to figure it out, but we decided the e-paper platform was correct for a number of reasons. And one of the primary reasons is we can drive it with solar, because of the 10 million bus stops in the country or whatever it is, 999% of that doesn't have any electricity, right? So we have to find a solution if we wanted to, in fact, deploy that many, you know, cover that much area and get information out to that many places. We need to find a solution that would work without electricity. And it took us years to develop that solution, but it's been very well received by the industry. We've got a lot of deployments. And again, the information hierarchy is, as you know, we know what to put up there. We know what to put on the screens to help people. And yeah, it was just very, very exciting.
How is that manifesting itself? I believe there are 13-inch e-ink displays that are on transit poles, basically.
We have a 10-inch digital bus stop, a 13-inch digital bus stop, and a 32-inch digital bus stop.
Oh, okay.
That's the product name, digital bus stop, and it does use an e-ink display. And so typically we would use the 10-inch or the 13 at a bus stop, and then a 13 or a 32 at a bus shelter.
Okay. And is the information dynamically updated?
Yes. Yes. The primary purpose of those is to deliver next arrival information.
Okay.
So they update every minute by, you know, working with the agency's CAD AVL system to get the predicted times. And it's fantastic, right? I mean, if you're waiting for a bus and you see that yours has been delayed or it's not, you know, going to be there for 30 minutes, you can go do something else if you want for a little while.
Mm-hmm. Or start walking.
I like to walk.
And you have this, the reason I caught that your company caught my eye was there was something about you working with the transit system in Allegheny County, basically Pittsburgh, yeah. Right?
Yep. Pittsburgh was our largest initial deployment with a variety of products. We have 7, I think, interactive kiosks there at all their train stations downtown. And you know, a couple of those, not all of them, because some are kind of remote. But the ones with heavy ridership, those are the ones that get about 20,000 interactions a month. So that's 250,000 people using it a year. And that does not include people that just walk up to it, get the information they want on the screen that's being displayed, and walk away without ever touching it. So that's 250,000 people that are actually touching the screen, requesting information. At the same time, we deployed a number of digital bus stop, the 10-inch units, around downtown, very popular. We were examining one, you know, when we were visiting. We were looking at one, kind of checking it out. It looked like maybe, you know, it was mounted quite right. And we were just, you know, just kind of making sure it was up there correctly. And a lady came up and said, "You're not taking that down, are you?" And we said, no, we're just making sure it's, you know, it's mounted properly. And she goes, "Oh, good, because I really like these things." And, you know, that's the kind of comment, unsolicited comment that you hear that makes you think, yeah, we got it right, you know, and we get those kind of comments wherever we go. So we have those deployed downtown, and we're in the process of deploying different sizes and more now with Pittsburgh. So that was a very, very, and it's, you know, challenging environment too, downtown Pittsburgh. You know, there's buildings, there's cold weather, there's hot weather, there's rain. So it's a really good area to just have our units out there and make sure that they're performing like they should in all different environmental conditions.
How do you illuminate the things in the evening?
Those particular units aren't illuminated, but we have them attached to solar stops that have lights. So you would just push the button and the light would come on. But even without that, it's just like a piece of paper. So if you think about how do people look at traditional timetables at night, you know, you walk up to them and you read a piece of paper, that is the same thing, except these are a lot easier to read because the text is bigger, right? So although those aren't lit, they're very easy to read at night. You just kind of got to get a little closer, I guess you'd say. But the, you know, the resolution's so good, it's easy. All the ambient light makes it no problem.
I would imagine there are going to be some transit systems who are innovative and have spent the time to research this stuff and know what they want.
Mm-hmm.
But there would be a hell of a lot of transit systems who you go to them and say, this is what we can do for you, and start talking about the capital cost of each of these e-ink signs, which on a onesie twosie basis probably don't seem very expensive, but when you start talking about hundreds or thousands of them, they start to openly wonder, well, how on earth would we pay for this? So how do you get them over the line?
Well, I mean, let me back up a little bit. Just want to clarify the initial units in Pittsburgh don't light, but the ones we have now do light. So I just want to clarify that.
Okay, sure.
Those were revision one, right? All our units light up. But to answer your question, so infrastructure has its own budgets for transportation. And, you know, if you put 1,000 shelters out there, that's going to be a lot more money than 1,000 digital bus stops. Mm-hmm. So how do they pay for that? It's an investment in the overall infrastructure, buses, another infrastructure item. So if you look at anything like this and like their other infrastructure items, you tie them together to create this overall, what they call passenger amenity. And sure, I mean, not every stop has a trash can. That's another trash, you know, passenger amenity. Not every bus stop has a light. Not every bus stop has a digital bus stop, et cetera, et cetera.
Or a bench.
So, I mean, there's always those kind of decisions being made. And, you know, it just depends on the agency and what they feel is a priority. But if they do feel certain things are a priority, they have budgets to, you know, manage their infrastructure. I mean, they have to, or else nothing would be out there, you know. And so if they decide that our signage is important at 100 of their stops, well, then it's important at 100 of their stops.
Yeah, and I guess 1,000 e-paper signs is like 2 feet of a subway tunnel.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, that's exactly right. So, I mean, really, as far as infrastructure items goes, it's pretty inexpensive compared to many other things, yeah. And so, from my perspective, I was because of, you know, our company, I would always argue that information is one of the more important items to have out there. Mm-hmm. You know, not many, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, there's a lot, buses are more important to transit agencies. So,
yeah, really. You
know, they have a different understanding of what's important than I do. But luckily, enough of them agree that, yeah, signage is an important part of it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much. That went very fast.
Yeah, it did go fast. Well, that was fun.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around for more than 2 years. You can click around the archive and find more than 100 conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9 at 16-9.net. There are now more than 6,000 posts in there about this industry. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside beautiful, amazing Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.